when we was doing it, and like Jonathan said that, and I was like, oh man, you knew she. Well, you know, like I'm thinking that people are gonna see it and be like, this is a black love story. Love, I thought everybody was gonna love it and like laugh. You know what I mean?
Oh my God, bro.
Bro, we spent 2 weeks defending him.
I seen it.
Chan, I started posting them on the story, on my story, like they were my kids.
They really loved each other.
Trust me.
I'm defensive.
Black love.
Yeah. I was like, y'all ain't never been around two people that love each other the way they do.
I don't know how it is.
He swiped
left.
Come on.
But hey.
You can't tell people what their love story is.
Nah, yeah.
That's what you try to tell people on the internet.
Yeah.
I know what happened to my love story. Yeah. I was the bad one.
So you were the good looking one.
I was the catch.
So you was like, you said that on the show too. You talking about this light skin and his red bones. And
because I watched Poetic Justice and I watched Officer and the Gentleman. And that was my sexual experiences that I watched. And then I capitalized on it.
A lot of J.O.'s.
Because you got to lick down that neck and you got to come down that middle.
I have a question. Can you just get it out early? The whole with light skin and all
bro.
That. Just get it out
bro.
Early. Go ahead.
What we got?
Go ahead. Get it out early.
I appreciate you keeping the culture going. Light skin, pretty dudes.
Come on.
See,
that's the thing.
Yes, sir.
Appreciate that.
He said
they like that one over there.
He set up.
Light skin, pretty dudes. Man, we take it over.
That's how J.O. got set up.
We got Steph. We got Obama.
Yeah, I do remember that. Mm-hmm.
That's exactly how J.O. got set up. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, y'all don't want to admit that now. Light skin dudes.
Can you admit that you set up J.O.? Because what he said was.
Set up J.O.
He said he was the catch. We bad red bones.
We are the catch. Y'all about to see me sit back and cross my leg here in a second. That's what that boy, we sit like that. You cross your leg?
Hell no.
You don't cross your leg?
My head ain't flexible enough right now, man.
Don't fall into that trap.
Hold up. Limitless. Take a stomach cap, pinning it. I fought the head to witness it. Got my people feeling militant. Way I'm feeling, got me up. On the mission, got me up. Knowing me, I got the key. On the vision, I can trust. Trust. Limitless. Niggas send me capping in it. I fought the head to witness it. Got my people feeling militant. Way I'm feeling, got me up. On the mission, got me up. Knowing me, I got the key.
Man, Jordan Love, welcome to the Pivot.
Yes, sir.
This is Freddie T. This is Chan. I'm RC. First of all, man, congratulations on an amazing year.
Thank you.
Truly. First year starting. Mm-hmm. It's difficult, man, to be in a place where it's 30 years of Hall of Fame, plus of mm-hmm. Hall of Fame play. And the way you executed, rebounded for some difficult games, I thought it was amazing. But quarterbacks are kind of like superheroes, especially in Green Bay, right? Every superhero has an origin story. You were almost Michael Jordan Love, which I think would have been a really cool name.
It would have been really cool, yeah.
Would have been a really cool name, Michael Jordan Love. But, you know, your father was always pushing you and saying that you were going to be what you eventually became.
Mm-hmm.
But I guess your story would start at 14, when your father passes, when your mother encourages you to continue playing football. What was that time like for you?
Yeah, that was a difficult time. Obviously, just losing my father, that was tough. Being 14 years old, the man I look up to, the man who raised me, losing a parent, like it was very tough for me and my family. A very hard situation, but yeah, like you said, you know, being able to bounce back and handle that adversity. And, like you said, that year I was thinking about quitting football. Like I was a backup quarterback, playing wide receiver. Stuff wasn't really going my way. And I was like, man, I might have to give it up. And my mom, you know, knowing that my dad's dream was for me to play football, me to be an athlete, that he was one that was always out front throwing a football with me, teach me how to throw, teach me how to catch. You know, that was his dream for me, and she's the one that really pushed me and, said stick it out another year and see what happens. And, ended up sticking out that year and became the starting quarterback and was able to fight through that adversity, get over that uphill battle and, come out better for it on the other end.
Well, and moving forward from that, like you're making it real simple, but it's not that simple.
Mm-mm.
You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. Like moving forward mm-hmm. from that, like what was that like? Because people need to know where, you know what I'm saying, why you are where you are today.
Yeah, no, it was tough. You know, you, like I said, you lose, you know, the person who's taught you so much. in life, and it was hard. It was very hard being a kid, just not understanding, you know, why the situation happened. Obviously, you know, people pass away and life goes on, but for it to be your dad, it's like, man, you never would have thought that would have happened. And that's my superhero. You know, my parents were my superhero. They both were, you know, police officers. So I've, you know, heard stories about my dad fighting crime and, you know, he seems like a superhero, and then to lose him was tough. But, you know, I had my three sisters, my mom, and, you know, I had a lot of support, you know, system around me that were able to help me get through it. But it was a very tough time. You know, that whole year, I'd say, was tough, because you got to just adjust to life. You know, everybody you talk to after that is asking you how you doing, and, you know, just things like that. It's a tough situation. It taught me at a young age that, you know, adversity happens in life. You know, you want life to be perfect. You want to think it's this, you know, dream and fairy tale that everything's going to be happy, everybody's going to be healthy, but life goes on and things happen, and it's not that way. So to be able to just handle that adversity and move on and grow from it, and I think just emotionally it matured me a little bit at a young age too.
Channing's sisters beat him up a lot, right?
They did. They used to beat me with my sister twisted off the antenna of an S10 pickup truck and whooped my back. And I threw a Kool-Aid cup at her, and we were fighting. Yeah,
ain't no throwing Kool-Aid cups. It's over with. You throw a Kool-Aid cup, hit your sister on that. It's over with.
You know, but you're a little different.
But you did have, you had three older sisters.
Two older sisters, one younger. Yeah.
You know, and you know, like, your pops wanted a son, but you had to, but you were like 5'6" or something entering high school.
Yeah.
You were a smaller guy. You've obviously grown.
5'6"?
5'6", my freshman year, man.
5'6"?
But I was, my parents started me early, so I was almost a year younger than everybody in my class, you know? So I was always the younger guy. And yeah, just had a, you know, a late bloomer. Yeah, I was 5'6". 5'6", 100.
Late bloomer, bitch, you was a midget.
I got a football picture my freshman year. I was one of the smallest dudes on my, like, in my friend group. I was the smallest dude. And playing receiver, like, backup, you know what I mean? And then I got another picture my senior year. I'm taller than everybody. So it's crazy how, yeah, man.
So what happens in that transition, though? Like, when does it click that you could actually be something? Because even after growing 6 inches or whatever it is, becoming the starting quarterback, it wasn't like you became this five-star player and every college was knocking down your door. So when were you able to start to think, okay, to yourself, that you could realize these dreams of becoming what you are today?
Yeah, man, the journey for me is because in high school, obviously undersized, was a backup, and, you know, I got strength coaches telling me, oh, you're gonna be, you know, 6'4", you're gonna be huge, you know, look at my hands, look at my feet, things like that. I'm like, just wait, you'll grow into your body, and I'm like, I'm not believing it. And then, you know, start hitting growth spurt, but, you know, still was trying to figure it out on the field, things like that. Wasn't this great player, I was a two-star coming out. And so it's all these things that, you know, my confidence wasn't super high in high school. I was always saying I was good. More than anything, I was a basketball player. I thought I was going to be a hooper, and that didn't work out. But I'd say my junior, going into my senior year, that's when, you know, started going to some more camps, played 7-on-7 with Ground Zero, got a little bit more looks over there. You know, that's when the offers started rolling in. I was like, okay, I'm going to go to college and, you know, get a free education, hopefully become the starting quarterback. But my mindset still wasn't, I'm going to make it to the NFL. Like, that was a dream, but it wasn't like a reality thinking that that could actually happen. So, you know, I went to college, and I think really once I started starting in college and started seeing myself getting better and better and better and being able to compete with these dudes, so I was looking around and being like, man, these dudes are really good. Like, I wish I could get there. And then, you know, just kept working, and obviously I got there and took over in college, became a starter. And those dreams, I was like, okay, next step's the NFL now. And it's all becoming a little bit more real. So I think my confidence through that, it all just kept growing.
Not until I was about 16, I met my dad. Mm-hmm. You know, so part of my childhood, I didn't know who my dad was. My mom was young. My grandmother stepped up to the plate. Like, she helped fill that void of not having a father figure. So me and my grandmother, we was like this prior to she passed away. Did you have another male figure in your life after losing your dad, or was it your mom or grandmother, anyone? Who stepped up to kind of help fill that void?
Yeah, so I had, obviously, my mom, who was, you know, she's awesome. If you guys ever get a chance to meet her, she's, you know, a superstar. She is always looking out for me and making sure Everything's good with me and my sister. So she's very, very awesome and a blessing. But other than that, I had, you know, some close friends growing up who I was, you know, would go over and hang out at their house, play basketball, like stay the night, those kind of things. And his dad, Mr. Hicks, was a very good role model for me when my dad passed away. And then my football coach, my high school coach, Brian Nixon, he was also just someone who was there, who I always looked up to because he was my coach. And then, you know, he helped me through the journey of football. And he was the one that was continuing to push me and tell me I was going to be, you know, I was going to go to college. I was going to, you know, grow into my body and become a really good player. And I had him, I had those two guys, but I had, you know, uncles and my grandpa is somebody that I look up to, and he was always checking on me after this incident to make sure everything was going good in my life. You know, the list goes on. There were so many different people that helped me, but I think the biggest one is always my mom.
You have an agent in David Mulugutta, who's hands down one of the best in the business.
Mm-hmm. He all right.
I follow Twitter. I follow Rappaport, and he, athletes first, deal done by David. I see the shit.
You know, David, he's the man. The thing that stood out to me most about Dave was just how much pride he takes in that and trying to do the best for everybody he's with. And his whole brand is family ties. And like when I met David, it was, you could see, like the guys he represent, it almost feels like a family. Get that bond going and have a group of guys that you can, you know, be cool with, and you're all going through the same thing to, you know, just build that relationship. So I think that was one of the coolest things I've seen. I don't know if there's too many other agents doing it like he's doing, and obviously.
But no, athletes first, I think that's an amazing name for the company because, you know, he fights for the deals. You have some agents out there that just kind of float. They let the teams box them in. But all these deals I've seen come out, the athletes come first. Mm-hmm. Like, he's like, no, we're not settling for that. We're mm-hmm. going to go out and kick these teams at, respectfully, mm-hmm. going to do business the right way. So
you talked about the journey, right, to get to where you are. And, you know, like, I wasn't drafted. Like, both of these guys were drafted. You're a first rounder. Like, I couldn't imagine the excitement when the phone actually rings. Mm-hmm. And you get an opportunity, you know, okay, this is where I'm going to spend the next year of my life, hopefully the next decade of my life. But for quarterbacks, only one guy plays. And you get drafted to Green Bay where Aaron Rodgers is the quarterback. What was that part of the process like for you? Because it has to be the excitement of knowing you've been drafted, knowing that you're a first-round quarterback, but you also understand, at least right away, you'll be sitting.
Oh, draft night is a crazy night in general. Unless you know what team you're going to right off the top, it's, you know, the sitting and waiting and just, you know, seeing guys get taken in that just waiting game, waiting for your phone to ring. So I was there with my family, man, and I was super excited when that phone finally rang. And, you know, I see Green Bay, Wisconsin. I'm like, okay, answer it. Packers, I'm like, oh, here we go. Got drafted. Like, that's what you work for. That's a dream come true and a blessing just to get there. But my mind immediately went to, okay, yeah, Aaron Rodgers is there. Like I've been watching Aaron my whole life. So, you know, just knowing that he's there and that's his team, it's like, okay, obviously I'm not coming in and starting right away in this situation. You know, it's going to be a situation where I'm going to come in and learn and, you know, develop and be a backup to start and just see what the situation plays out and how it unfolds. But definitely right away knew, you know, I wasn't coming in to start.
Coming out, being a dog, mm-hmm. being everybody knew what you had, first round draft pick, and then now people start questioning your talent. Mm-hmm. And that's something that a lot of players have to deal with.
Yeah, I mean, I think most players got to deal with that. I think it's one thing that you're going to have these, people going to have these questions until you get on the field. And obviously being a backup for 3 years, the questions kept coming in and not even getting preseason my rookie year, so I definitely didn't see the field at all. So people just didn't really know what I was about. Being drafted to Green Bay, they have Aaron Rodgers. Like, you know, there's a lot that went into my situation. I think it just raised people's antennas a little more. Like, who is this guy? Can he play? Is he going to be good? Is, like, what's the situation going to look like? So, you know, I dealt with that for 3 years, and, you know, it was a lot. It was people coming to me in the locker room like, bro, why are these people asking me about you all offseason? I'm like, man, I don't know what to tell you. Like I'm going to get out there when I get out there, when yeah. I get my opportunity. Yeah. So, yeah, it was a lot of dealing with that, man.
So it's one thing to be questioned, mm-hmm. but I guess the question is, did you question yourself and your abilities, like your patience? What was at the forefront? Complacency, like, I don't know what's going to happen, or more motivation?
I think if anything, it was more motivation. Just wanting to prove people wrong. You know, I see everything they're saying, how, you know, this guy can't play, who is this guy's trash. And you know, just knowing that once I get my opportunity, I'm gonna prove people wrong and I'm gonna show them who I am. And just waiting on that opportunity, knowing that I gotta control what I can control and the situation is what it is. And as long as Aaron is there, I'm gonna, you know, keep doing what I can do to get better in the offseason when I get those opportunities and those reps with the starters, and take advantage of preseason when I get those chances in the game, and just trying to make the most of that situation. But knowing that when I get my opportunity, I'm gonna take a run with it.
You started the season hot, you know. First few games played extremely well, and then it was like week 3 or 4 through 10 where the team struggled. Mm-hmm. Coming into the season, like a lot of the talk was, right, because before you got an opportunity to start, it was Aaron couldn't excel because Devontae left and there weren't people on the team to throw the football to. And then you take over and it's all these first and second year young people and young players at the skill positions that's gonna have to grow with you. Mm-hmm. You guys start hot, you kind of hit a lull in the middle of the season where the team's not playing great, but your statistics aren't great. Mm-hmm. And then you go on this run to finish the season that's MVP caliber numbers. Played, I think you beat Pat, I think you beat Dak obviously in the playoffs as well. What was, or how did you deal with that time where the team wasn't playing well? Because essentially with the deal that you did, you were playing to show them I can be the franchise guy mm-hmm. going forward. And I know you had to hear some of the noise during that point.
Yeah, the noise was there, obviously. Like you said, a young receiver core, you know, they're hearing the noise as well. Like, we don't have any weapons. We don't have any vets on the team and the receiver core, things like that. So, you know, our whole team was very motivated to go out and prove people wrong. My first year starting, like, there's just a lot of variables. But, you know, started, you know, opened up with Chicago, played a great game. And then, you know, like you said, kind of after that, we went on a losing streak, not playing as well. You know, I think all those games we lost, though, we were right there. Like, they were very close games where, besides really, you know, our first Lions game, where they're close games where if we just did a couple things different, execute a couple plays, we'd get there and we'd be right over the hump. But I think more than anything, it was just getting reps, being out there on the field. You know, we had a lot of young guys, like I said, to be able to develop and gain experience each game. And being down in a couple of those games and seeing ourselves like, man, we got to find a way to turn this around. Like, yeah. Defense is balling, offense is a couple plays here and there that we're just not capitalizing on. So I think more than anything, it was just keeping our confidence high and not letting that waver throughout that whole process, knowing that we were going to get over the hump. Like, we were a good team. I knew we were a good team. I knew we had a lot of good weapons. We just got to find ways to play well. And I think the biggest thing was not letting our confidence waver. People in the locker room stayed together. You know, it wasn't a lot of point fingers and complaining. But guys, you know, stuck together and found ways to get better.
Talk to me about Thanksgiving, though.
Yeah, Lions.
Right? Like,
yeah.
Like Thanksgiving against the Lions, that was the game, you know, everybody sitting home. We eating, get an opportunity to sit down, and we all knew what the Lions were. Eventually, they go to the NFC Championships, where you guys very well could have been as well. But that was one of those games, man. Like, everything felt like it clicked. Mm-hmm. Everything seemed to be on point. Was that sort of the point where you guys realized who you could actually be? And for yourself individually, did it sink in that, okay, I could really do this?
Oh, yeah. I really think every game throughout the season, we were building that confidence and gaining it through each, you know, game we played. But the Lions game, man, I think that was our, you know, first time seeing another team for the second time. Mm-hmm. Obviously, the first game didn't go how we planned and didn't play as we wanted. And we knew we were a good team. We knew they were a good team. But I still think, you know, we just didn't come out and play the way we were supposed to. And I think just starting fast that game, you know, got us going and got us in that mindset. Like, all right, we know who we are and we know what we can do to these guys. And we were just executing on all cylinders and just playing, you know, free, you know, not worrying about mistakes. That was a big turning point for me in the season, was just loosen up and not worry about mistakes, not trying to be perfect out there on the field. You know, if you make a bad pass, you miss a throw, miss a read, you know, forget about it, move on to the next play. So that was huge for me and my confidence. But like I said, it was our first time seeing a team for the second time. And that was a fun game. That was a fun game.
Bro, coming in as a young quarterback and what the start of your career was and knowing you were backing up, like you said, Raj was there and all, and then being the guy, because it's safety, a running back, a linebacker. Like, when we got drafted, it wasn't that pressure on us of being the face of the franchise. And so then you come in and you have to really turn into that dude. Like, what's that pressure like? Because I don't even know, bro. I locked in. It was Junior Seau, Zach Thomas, and Jason Taylor. with the other linebackers when I got in. So I had no pressure. Like, they ran to me all the time. I had a bunch of tackles because they didn't believe in me. But the pressure of being the guy of a city.
It's a lot of pressure. But that's what comes with being a quarterback. That's what comes with being an NFL. But, yeah, when I got to Green Bay, it was a lot of pressure, just like we talked about, being the guy that was drafted to a team that had Aaron Rodgers. And, you know, I'm trying to prove myself and prove how good of a player I am to these guys who don't know me. You know, I've never played with me. So that was where I felt that pressure, just trying to prove it to my teammates of who I am, which was tough, trying to prove that while, you know, being a rookie, learning the playbook. Like, there was a lot that went into my rookie year that, you know, I tell people all the time, it's tough to excel as a rookie quarterback, you know, getting thrown in the fire and trying to learn so many new things at one time and also perform on the field. But, you know, I was able to, you know, kind of just put that pressure to the side, and because it's easier when you're not playing, I would say, when you're on the bench. And, you know, I didn't really have to do a lot of media that year. So, you know, there was a lot of things that I was kind of not in that light of what it would be like if I was a starting quarterback. So a little bit of that pressure was taken off, I would say.
You talk about pressure. It's pressure, man, to go to Dallas in the first week of the playoffs and play against the Dallas Cowboys, who at the time people thought could win the Super Bowl. They had a quarterback who's in the MVP conversation, you know. Y'all show up, and it wasn't even close.
He danced.
You know what I mean? Like, y'all started playing and won. Like, late in the game, you know what I'm saying? Like, you in the red zone, y'all throwing it sidearm, y'all start, like really, you and Matt LaFleur really seemed to click as the season went along. It was like he had to learn what life was like without Aaron Rodgers and what fits Jordan Love best. And you also had to learn what it's like to be the starting quarterback of the Green Bay Packers. What was that week of preparation headed into that game? What were some of the conversations you guys had, because you're running up against a team that truly everybody thought this is the year that the Dallas Cowboys finally get it?
Yeah. You know, there was a lot going into that week just because, like we said, the year we had going into that, it was a win and get in situation. So we were rolling, had won our last couple games and been playing well. And then obviously get to the playoffs. This is my first time being in the playoffs and being a starter. There's a lot of guys on our team, first time being in the playoffs. We're going to get up against a really good Dallas team at their place. So, you know, our conversation with Matt, he was telling me all week, man, just don't put any added pressure on yourself. Treat it like another game, which I'm sure a lot of coaches have told you guys. But, you know, that was kind of our mindset, that underdog mentality, like we were going to go in there and shock people. And that's what we did. But, you know, credit to Matt. I think we had a really good game plan coming into it. Obviously, we played the Cowboys the year before. Matt had a good feel of, you know, the defense and what he felt like they were going to be doing. I think we had an outstanding game plan going into it.
Okay, look. All right, man. Listen, I know you're nice and humble and
very
all.
Pleasant.
Hey, y'all was blowing them out, though.
We was.
They tore their ass up.
Yeah,
let's
so,
be
like,
honest.
At some point where you're sitting on the sideline, you were sitting on the sideline, because you know how it is. It's like, hey, it's just another game, and they're telling you all this. But I've been in those big playoff games. Them not so much, but I have, right? And so when I was in those games, like, they didn't really,
I can't even tell the difference,
right? And I couldn't imagine being the quarterback.
Yeah, no.
Once your team starts to get up and you're winning and you're at Dallas and you see that they're reeling, when does it hit you that, hold on, like, we beating their ass?
I mean, that whole game, that's what we were thinking on that sideline. Like, it was a fun game. Just to come in there, you know, the crowd's into it, and to be able to, you know, quiet that stadium down real early, it was awesome, man. But I think really, man, everything we was doing was working, it felt like. It's one of those games where you just locked in the zone, and you can't do no wrong almost. So, yeah, we were rolling.
You made a close friend of ours really cry. Like, real tears.
Yeah.
I called our producer after the game, you know, to check on her. I know she's a huge Dallas fan.
Okay, okay.
The pivot almost ended. Legitimately.
We had told their ass.
Yeah, we had shoots the next week. She couldn't get out of bed. And honestly, y'all broke the Cowboys. They not even participating in free agency. Like, the Cowboys forgot that there was an offseason after that game.
So
this would be Micah Parsons and nobody else.
Just want to go back and remind our viewers the reason why our producer was crying and almost ended the show is because of you. You were 16 for 21, 272 yards, 3 touchdowns, a passer rating of 157.2, which is a point shy of a perfect pass rate. You had a hell of a game. Mm-hmm. And Alicia was like, I cannot believe this. So shout out to Mr. Love for making that. Our producer feel bad.
We ain't had no believers in here, man. We ain't had no believers.
I'll be honest, Jordan.
I was skeptical. Hey,
man. But when that does happen, though, like I say this all the time, right? Expectations are the leading cause of disappointment. Mm. Right? And so coming into the season, there were doubters. Mm. And those people felt really good, like week 3 through 10. Mm-hmm. You know, Jordan Love's not ready. There's not enough skill player experience. He's going to have to lead this young group. There were questions about Matt LaFleur. Mm-hmm. Matt LaFleur can't coach without Aaron Rodgers. All of those adjustments are made, and we're in the divisional round of the playoffs. We're watching the Green Bay Packers up at halftime against the San Francisco 49ers, mm-hmm. who at that time were the best team in the NFC, number one seed. When you're at halftime of that game, playing as well as you are, Aaron's running the football the way he is, the defense is dominating at that point. What were those conversations at halftime? Because you guys were 30 minutes away from advancing to the NFC Championship.
Mm-hmm. Man, those conversations were just similar to most other games. You know, let's go finish that game. That's the mindset. You know, obviously, we knew what type of team San Fran was, all the weapons they got over there. But yeah, I mean, we were right there in that game with them and with a chance to win. And obviously fell short, just a couple of little opportunities. Ended up throwing two interceptions in that game. So it's all those little details, like if this doesn't happen, if you execute this play a little bit better, you know, what could have happened? So, you know, we're in that mindset of what could have been, what if we could have made it to the Super Bowl, right. Being the team that everybody doubted coming into the year, being the team that nobody, you know, thought was gonna win. Mm-hmm. So-and-so game. So, but like you said, man, coming into the playoffs, man, the expectations were low for us. Yeah. People didn't even think we were going to make it there. But as a team, we knew, like I said before, how good we were. We had a lot of really good pieces. And once we started clicking towards the end of the season, man, we were rolling. So, yeah, that was a tough game. But, yeah, halftime, those conversations were, let's go finish this game. And yeah, we're on the road to the Super Bowl.
Obviously, quarterbacks get a lot of the praise when a team does well. But they definitely have to accept a lot of accountability when your team loses. Mm-hmm. You mentioned throwing those two interceptions in that game. Obviously, the last one both to Dre Greenlaw, but obviously the last one to Dre Greenlaw, getting outside of the pocket, trying to make a play, which is the thing we all pointed to when you were leaving Utah State. Mm-hmm. He can make off-platform throws. He knows how to improvise. He can create second-chance plays. I know quarterbacks think differently. You guys kind of go through, okay, what could I have done differently? What could I do moving forward so that this doesn't happen? How much have you thought about those interceptions? How much have you thought about those last 30 minutes of the season to motivate you going forward?
A lot. You know, those are the plays you go back and watch, and like you said, you just think, what could I have done differently to make this a better play, to not have this interception? So I've watched that clip a good amount of times. Obviously, it makes you sick going back and watching those plays like that. But, yeah, like you said, it's that just knowing when to make those plays and when to, you know, cross that fine line of doing too much and doing enough to make a play. So just understanding, you know, that a lesson I learned in college, you don't have to be Superman out there. Like, you don't have to try and make every play. And that's one thing I did a little bit too much in college, was trying to make those Superman throws and extend every play. And, you know, in your head, you're like, okay, yeah, this is a completion. I'm going to get it right there to that guy and then throw it. And, nah, these guys are they're fast in the NFL. They're going to recover on that ball and pick it. So just that fine line of understanding when to, you know, try and make those heroic plays and put the team on your back and when to throw it away to you know, live to fight another down, things like that.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time, the Roast of Tom Brady, a Netflix live event happening May 5th, hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
How hard is that when you're extremely talented, though? Like, I knew there was a box of things I could do, mm-hmm. and then there was a whole hell of a lot outside of those boxes I couldn't, mm-hmm. right? And I sort of just stayed in my lane, and I was like, as long as I stay in this lane, they probably won't fire me, right? It's different for you because you're drafted in the first round because you have a skill set that says you should be. And not only that, for 3 years, you've watched someone with an extremely large bag of tools as well make some of those off-platform throws, do some things that truly aren't necessarily coached. So with having that extreme level of talent, how difficult is you to sort of rein yourself in for some things and some habits you may have built being at Utah State and being the best player on the field many times?
I mean, that's very hard. It's one of those things that I've been working on since I got to the NFL because, you know, coming out of the college, that was the biggest question mark was, you know, is he going to be a guy throwing the ball all over the field and doing too much out there, which I did my last year at Utah State. But, you know, that's that fine line of me and Matt talk about all the time is, you know, going through your reads and, okay, can I make this throw? Is it too tight or just finding that check down? And that's the lesson I've had to learn is, you know, check downs are not bad. And they get you those positive yards, get the ball moving. And then, like I said before, there are times where you got to, you know, fit the ball in there, make those tight window throws. But like you said, being able to watch A-Rod and, you know, see the crazy plays he made, but also the smart plays he made of, you know, kind of calculating those risks and knowing when to, you know, take those risks and when not to was huge for me and my development just to see a guy do it. Very talented, could make every throw on the field and make it look easy. And then just learning how to play the game and not be a game manager, but, you know.
It's a bad word.
I'm not even trying to say that. But, you know, that fine line, fine line of just being a pro and, you know, making those good reads and finding ways to win those games.
You now, obviously, extremely mature. You mentioned, you know, the passing of your father, sort of progressing that maturity forward. But, you know, now you're in a situation, you mentioned how amazing your mother is and, you know, having sisters. What has it been like to experience the highs of, you know, being drafted, but also fighting through the adversity and having them be a part of this process after knowing what it is like to lose someone close to you?
Yeah, for me, I think that's the craziest part that I've experienced. For me, that's easy. You know, that's what I've been doing my whole life. You play the game, you win some, you lose some, and you got to, you know, hear about it the next day. But obviously, I think for my friends and family, you know, me making the NFL and now they're seeing all this stuff on social media, you know, people talking crazy about me and they're the ones kind of getting affected by it. And they're like, they're always calling me like, are you doing okay? Like, just want to check on you, see how you're doing. I've seen stuff on social media, how they're talking about you. I just want to make sure you're not seeing all that. And I'm like, you know, this is just another day for me. Like we've experienced harder things and, you know, people talking bad about me on social media. So people that don't know me. So I'm not ever going to get wrapped up in, all that hype and let that affect my day. But it is tough, you know, you're not immune to it. You see some of the stuff people say. And for me, it's always, like I said earlier, trying to prove people wrong and take that and use that as fuel. But I think the craziest part is how my family is now.
How do they get it, though? Because I know, like, my people like to fight. You know what I mean? Like,
they some pit bulls or whatever.
Yeah, like, when my people see it, like, they still want to fight now. You know what I mean? Like, Tiki Barber can't ever go to Louisiana. You know, like I already know. Like, I ain't even got to deal with it. You know what I mean? So for you, because then too, right, it's always trying to, like, manage their emotions. Because you're kind of even keel. You could deal with it. You understand it's part of the program. But, you know, like, when your people hot and they start telling you about it, it actually starts to piss you off. Right? Because it might be something you haven't even seen.
Bernie Mac said it. Be yourself. If people don't like you for being yourself, then fuck them. And that's what it is. Like, that's the way I live. I think that's the way your dad lives. You know, Ryan responds to a lot of people. But, yeah, man, be yourself. Like, you have to be yourself because everybody else is taken.
Yeah, but I think I guess my point in asking the question is, it's not, a lot of times when you're being attacked as a player, it's not about being yourself. Like, it's not about the person a lot of times. It's about what you do for a living. Right, the thing that you've poured your entire life into to have an opportunity to do. You're playing a kid's game for King's Ransom, and you're doing all that you can. And then people are constantly criticizing. People are constantly scrutinizing. And when your family members hear it or your friends hear it, it affects them differently because they know that you're doing all of those things in order to earn this. Mm-hmm. And so I think, so that was always hard for me to navigate because there were things I didn't want to hear that you had to. In Green Bay, bro, like I played there. The stadium just pops up in the neighborhood, right? You know, now Pittsburgh wasn't gonna always put you up in the best hotel, but we were usually in nice hotels. Like we were in the joint. I remember walking, like the door opened and you was outside. You know what I mean? Like
it was a motel.
Yeah, it didn't have a whole, it didn't have a hall.
Yeah, I was at the motel.
You know, and sort of being the only show in town, do you look at that and say to yourself, this is great? Like, I know if I play well, everybody's gonna love it. Everybody's gonna support us. This is what they do on Sundays and Thursdays and Monday nights. Or do you look at that as added pressure, knowing what the history of that position has been in that organization?
Yeah, I think what you said at first, just how great of an experience it is being in Green Bay. And like you said, everybody in Green Bay is a Packer fan. They love Packers, they love football. And you know that's what they got out there. Yeah. There's not too much going on. That's what they have. So I think it makes it all that much more special. Like you said, when you're winning, they love you. And that's sports in general. When you're losing, you know, the love might not be there. So, but the pressure side, I try not to add too much pressure. Yeah. We already have enough pressure as it is to perform and be who we are. So I never will let you know. A city or the fans or what's going on outside of ball trying to affect me because there's already pressure to perform. And I mean, that's my job right now is to perform, and it's a performance-based job we talk about. So if you're not doing that, you ain't got to worry about the fans, you know, you got to worry about
your job.
Yeah. So I think it's all great. It's
my frat brother plays on your team.
Who's that?
He Jesus plays corner. Christ.
Kappa.
He's a Kappa.
Jai Money.
What's wrong with Jair, man?
They spin the little canes around the hand and they twist their booties.
Nobody
that
does.
That's what y'all do. Y'all twitch y'all booties.
It's the shoulders. It's nothing to do with that.
Shimmy.
Do whatever. What is wrong with Jair, man? He ran up on the lady.
The news reporter.
Yeah, he ran up. And she was like, this Green Bay fan thinks that they have a chance.
Right.
You know what I mean? My dog ran out. He was at the coin toss because mm-hmm. he felt like he was in his hometown. Mm-hmm. And being in his hometown, mm-hmm. he should be a captain, mm-hmm. right? And he wasn't fazed by it. He was very honest about why he went out there. What's up with Jair, man?
Man, that's Ja. That is Ja. When you talk about, you know, be who you are, that's who Ja is. He is, to say the least, he's a character. And you never really know what you're going to get out of Ja. It's always a very interesting conversation that keeps you on your toes. But man, I love Ja. Everybody on the team loves Ja. And yeah, the news reporter, just the little things he does, you never know what he's gonna do next. So, but obviously you see what type of player he is on the field, man. He's a phenomenal player. Yeah, yeah. So I can't say enough good things about him.
Aaron Rodgers. That was the night he suffered, the Monday night game he mm-hmm. suffered his Achilles tear. What was your initial thoughts and reaction when you saw that play?
Yeah, that was tough, man. I was watching there the game. I was glued in. I was excited to see, obviously, what Aaron's going to do over there with the Jets, man. I think a lot of people were excited to see. You know, I've been watching them on Hard Knocks, and just excited to see it. And then, man, for him to go down that quick and that early, it was tough. I didn't know what was going on at first when he was getting up and going to the sideline and. Man, I was just hoping all the best for him, hoping it wasn't anything too serious, but man, that was tough.
We've talked a lot about your maturation, your patience, your maturation, turning into the player who you are now, mm-hmm. and learning behind Aaron. What's like the number one takeaway that you would be able to share with us that you learned from him?
Yeah, the biggest thing I always say I saw from him was the consistency, day in and day out. You know, that was my first taste of when I got to the NFL. You know, you think in college you're a good player, things like that, and you get to the NFL, and I was able to see this dude be great every day in practice. Like, as many crazy throws you see him making a game, he's making 10 times crazier plays in practice. And, you know, every ball is on the money, you know. And it's not just the throws, it's the protections, the reads he does and everything does, you know, quarterback specific was very consistent in his approach throughout the week. So. I think that was the biggest lesson I learned from him, is just trying to be as consistent as I can every day. Because I was, my rookie year, I was all over the place, you know, wild throws and bad reads. And I said, man, if I can just get consistently good every day and almost, you know, do what I see him doing, that would make me a better player. But yeah, just the consistency.
Green Bay, we know the legend. Mm-hmm. We know the mystique. Like, it's all football. Mm-hmm. The fans are shareholders of the team. When you were drafted that night, and I know you're familiar with the Lambeau Leap and all that, when my first time playing in Green Bay, I thought the Lambeau Leap, like, I had to jump this high. That fucking shit.
No, it's up there. No.
It's about waist, a little bit more than waist high. It's a, right? It's
I don't
a little
know about
fence,
all that.
Right?
I don't know about all that. It's up
like,
there.
It ain't like
it's
a
big leap. JJ, you got to get
like
up there, bro.
It's kind of like it's right here.
No, yeah.
All right, so a little Green Bay trivia.
Yeah.
Right? Do you know who started the Lambeau Leap?
Leroy Butler.
But Leroy Butler.
Yep.
Now Hall of Famer.
Doing his
Come
thing.
On, man.
Now
I know. Yeah.
Duval. My guy, Leroy.
Yeah, Leroy's great people. He's still, you know, he's out there practices. He keeps in contact with all the players, man. He's great. He's a great dude.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes.
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
We talked about the Dallas Cowboys. Y'all broke them.
Yeah.
Right? After y'all play, they can't figure out that there's a season that needs to be played in 2024. One team that does understand that there's a season to be played is the Green Bay Packers. Mm-hmm. You go out, you get Josh Jacobs. Mm-hmm. You guys bring over Xavier McKinney at safety. Like, this is the team that's saying, all right, we want to go out and win. Mm-hmm. You know, you've cleared cap space, losing one of the great ones, but, you know, David Bakhtiari had been injured. When you think about this upcoming year, you know, what you were able to do, Wicks, Dobbs, I mean, just Reed, like all the different players who made plays. Now you got Josh in the backfield. How excited are you for this upcoming season, being a second-year starter and knowing that you're playing for an organization that believes now because of their quarterback, now because of their head coach, they can win now?
Yeah, it's a great feeling, man. We're all very hungry for this upcoming year. But like you said, man, the confidence from, you know, top to bottom is there. You know, the organization believes that, you know, it's the perfect time to have a chance to win a Super Bowl this year. And those conversations we had after that 49ers game were, man, like, work harder. Try and find ways to get better, because next year we're going to do it. There's no more we're a young team. There's no more of those what ifs. Like, people know what we're about now, and obviously, you know, we'll have that target on our back. People are going to want to beat us. So, you know, we're hungry. I know everybody in that locker room is hungry and ready to get back. And obviously, we added some key pieces with Josh Jacobs and Xavier McKinney. So, I'm excited. We're going to have some more pieces coming in with the draft. But I'm excited for me to be able to take that next step year two. For a lot of the receivers we have, to, you know, those rookies that we had last year, to be able to take that next step in year two. Because I know just how much experience you gain from having that first offseason to work and grow as a player. And now you know that playbook coming in, and you're not trying to learn it. So we're all very excited. But we got a great squad, and yeah.
Y'all
we're
still
ready.
Kind of the underdogs, though, Joe. Like, the Green Bay Packers have been the king of the North.
Yeah.
For as long as we could possibly remember.
Mm-hmm.
The Minnesota Vikings 2 years ago have an excellent year. Mm-hmm. Green Bay is knocked out of the playoffs late by the Detroit Lions. Detroit Lions now win the North. You guys come and play very, very well down the stretch. Mm-hmm. But I don't know if going into the season, people are going to be looking at y'all and saying, okay, this is the team to beat in the division. What do you feel like you guys have to do to regain that, right? So y'all can get back to when Aaron was telling folks he owned the organization when he was playing against NFC North teams.
Yeah, I mean, you just got to go win it, right? That's obviously, you know, he left, people left, and you know, people said we were, you know, not that team in the NFC anymore, and you know, they weren't worried about us. But you know, I think the only way to get that title back is to go win it, and so you know, that's what we got plans on doing this year.
Hey, man, hold it down for the light skins.
I'm always holding it down.
You for always hold it down
on,
for
man.
Us, bro.
Come
we
on,
taking
man.
Over now. Don't sleep on us.
Come on.
You guys
hey,
are
bro,
not.
Bro. Hey, man, you got to learn how to cross some big-ass legs.
I got to go, man. There we go.
Hey, it's a light skinned pole.
I'm telling you what, he crossed his leg about like mine. He, my dog, need to just sit like that, baby.
Since we're talking quarterbacks in NFC North, mm-hmm. you're without two quarterbacks in the division. Kirk Cousins is now in Atlanta, and Justin Fields is now in Pittsburgh. Mm-hmm. How excited are you for Justin to have an opportunity to, you know, show people exactly what he can do under the terms of good coach and Coach Tomlin, mm-hmm. all those different things?
Man, I'm very excited for Justin. Obviously, since he's got to the league, we've been, you know, linking up in the offseason, doing right. different things, working out together. So, you know, our relationship has grown. But, man, I think more than anything, just getting a fresh situation, mm-hmm. You know, and like I've said, now he gets a chance to go continue to prove people wrong who've doubted him and said he isn't this and he isn't that. So I'm excited for him and just a fresh opportunity, man, you know, be able to go and, you know, take over a new team. So I'm happy for him.
I think what's important is he has an opportunity now to kind of see what it looks like to learn some things under, you know, a veteran player at his position, because when he was drafted, he was just thrown into the fire. Mm-hmm. And Chicago hadn't got right since. The multiple coaches, the offense coordinators, like, it's just been mm-hmm. a disaster. So he's lacked that consistency. Now he's at a situation where he has a veteran quarterback to compete with. Mm-hmm. We don't know what's going to happen. Mm-hmm. Only Coach Tomlin knows. And maybe RC can give us a little bit more insight, having played in Pittsburgh. But I think for me, I think the benefit will being able to get there and having that veteran that can show him, much like Aaron showed you, and also having a coach like Coach Tomlin, who knows how to get the best out of players.
Mm-hmm. The bottom line is, man, there's only 32 spots for all of y'all.
Yeah.
And what Justin Fields being traded to the Pittsburgh Steelers says to me, it's just very difficult to not only earn those spots, but keep those spots. Mm-hmm. And, you know, what you were able to do in your first year as a starter definitely showed that you belonged. The way you finished the season showed that you could be a part of an elite tier. We always ask this question, and, you know, you're a young man, so it's going to be other pivots in your life. But we always ask, like, what was the biggest pivot in your journey? The moment that you always point to that happened that either changed your life, changed your direction, taught you something, took something from you that allowed you to be where you are today?
I would say, I mean, we've already talked about it, but just my dad passed away, man. That has been my biggest battle throughout life. And something that I definitely think has shaped me, shaped my childhood, and it's just, it changed the way I look at life. You know, I think that was definitely the biggest pivot in my life, is, you know, going through that adversity and, you know, just gave me that lesson that, you know, life's gonna keep going on. You know, things happen in life. And kind of that mindset that it is what it is, control what you can control, control, you know, how I keep moving on and handle every day going forward. And you can sit in a room and, you know, cry about it all day long, and that's not gonna help you. That's not gonna help you going forward. So I definitely think that was the biggest pivot in my life.
You know, I know for you all, obviously the adverse reaction to medication was very difficult. Is it harder to deal with because of the way it happened for you? Or is it just simple, because all of us, you know, if you lose a parent, it's difficult. But just not having some of those answers?
Yeah, that was definitely the hardest part of it. Knowing that, you know, that wasn't my dad at the time. You know, it was a different person. You know, the medication was messing with his mind and kind of altering that. So I definitely think that was the hardest part, because you could say, you know, what if mm-hmm. this didn't happen? What if things didn't get changed? He'd still be here today. So that was definitely the hardest part. But that's that lesson I learned, man. You know, what can I do? It is what it is.
Well, I mean, you are his dream personified, man. And I think you can always walk forward knowing that, you know, you handled the adversity. Like you said, your mother was there for you to push you. You had family there, but he'd obviously be extremely proud. But the people who are still here, I'm sure, are proud of you as well. We appreciate mm-hmm. your time, dog.
Yes, sir. Well, appreciate
you. You get manicures?
You said what?
You get manicures because your nails are fucking immaculate.
Nah, my nails look good.
Bro, your nails are shiny and shit.
Man, nah.
What is you get manicures. Bro, nigga, you get manicures. Don't act crazy. Nah,
I got my nails done. My toes, though, I get a pedicure.
You get a pedicure?
I go
You don't get manicures?
Hell no.
I was sitting there for an hour. I'm like, damn, this thing is
shiny. This is long, dirty.
This is shiny.
You don't get your feet done either?
That's taking showers, I guess. I take a good amount of showers.
Them shits are pink and beautiful.
Yeah, I do.
You sit there talking and put your hand together. I was like,
hold up. Limitless. Take a stomach cap, pinning it. I fought the head to witness it. Got my people feeling militant. Way I'm feeling, get me up. On the mission, get me up. Knowing me, I got the key. On this vision, I can trust. Trust. Limitless. Take a stomach cap, pinning it. I fought the head to witness it. Got my people feeling militant. Way I'm feeling, get me up. On the mission.